The hour of 8 o'clock and a little plus having arrived, I'm going to call this Taxes Committee meeting to order. And first of all, everyone, welcome back. And thank you for your very good attendance this early on a very cold day. It seems like last year was either snowing or cold about every day we met. So I really, really appreciate that. Again, I want to thank everyone for the very productive session that we had last year, and look forward to another good year of moving this state forward. So thank you, members and staff, for all of your work on that. Before we get into the order of the day, we certainly, I think, have to recognize and note one member who is not here, Representative Diane Loeffler, who I know on the House floor we talked about some really good memories of Representative Loeffler. But, you know, I think we can all say that she was very passionate about those issues. And you talk about working family credit or the renter's credit. She was always so passionate about that. And Chair Davids, she was kind of our secret weapon in that, you know, not many people come to the Tax Committee with the knowledge she had on Health and Human Services. And so when you can combine the knowledge set that she had in those areas, was a real benefit to this entire committee. But she also set a very good example for the professionalism, the kindness, the courtesy that she kind of approached her issues and members with. And certainly that was a real benefit for this committee and for the House. And we will miss Representative Loeffler and her smile that she brought here every day, too. So, Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I served with Chair Loeffler 15 years, so I was able to talk to her for 13 years. We had actually very, very long conversations, and once we got to the point where we came to the conclusion that we would not change each other's minds, the conversations changed, and I always liked to talk to her. I never understood liberals. I never understood them. And
well, that's a...
So what I would do is I would talk to her about how liberals think. I never understood it, but she knew how they thought, and she would try to explain it to me, and I never quite understood it. But you have to understand, I was at the top of my class. It just wasn't all that big a class. But with Representative Loeffler, you could do that, and that's rare around here anymore. It seems that we've gone way to the left, we've gone way to the right, and there isn't a whole lot of folks who can talk. But with Chair Loeffler, you could talk to her. One thing we really, really did agree on was how much we love the Minnesota House of Representatives. That was never in dispute and never questioned by either side. And Chair Marquardt, I don't think she was that secret of a weapon. She was just good at what she did. She was always well-informed. She was always prepared. And if you're a debater, you had better have done the same thing. So I have very fond memories of Chair Loeffler, and she will be greatly missed in this institution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chair Davids. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to briefly just say that I served with Diane on the Health and Human Services Committee for 6 years and then for this committee for 4 years, and I found her professionalism to be very very astute and a good example for me as well, being Irish, and I'm not as detailed as she is, and I was always amazed and impressed with that, and because of that was more so. But she did many of my bills in the HHS. She supported with a twinkle in her eye and a suggestion of how to make the bill better. And then in this committee, she usually didn't support some of my bills with a twinkle in her eye and a suggestion how to make the bill better. So she really was a joy to work with, and hearing all the great things about her on the floor, I am saddened that I didn't get to know her even better in the 9 years that I was here.
And it was an honor to serve. Representative McDonald, all of us are always trying to make your bills better. You owe me one back here. You know we
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Bob Hope said that the day my friends don't make fun of me are the day I have to start to work. So I'll take that as a compliment.
Welcome back, Representative McDonald. Thank you. So, and we also have a new member for the Tax Committee, Representative Carlson. So, welcome. I know you're a member of the Property Tax Committee, but welcome to the Tax Committee.
Good to be here.
So, thank you very much. Chair David.
If I could, I would like to congratulate Representative Carlson on his new chairmanship of the Property Tax Division, a very, very important division of this committee. And even though I don't serve on it, we'll look forward to working on what you bring forward.
So, and we all members share that. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Chair David. I did reach out to Representative Hertas, so we hope to keep that same channel of communication that Representative Walfer did. So continue along that kind of same vein. So appreciate the words.
Very good. Thank you much. We do have a couple sets of minutes. And so we have the April 11th, 2019 minutes, and the May 23rd, 2019 minutes. Representative Les Legarde moves to approve of those minutes. Is there any discussion? If not, I'm going to call for approval of the April 11th, 2019, and the May 23rd, 2019 minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion, the minutes are approved. The motion does prevail. So next on the list, members, are seven bills that should have been referred straight to the Property and Local Tax Division. They were sent to taxes. And so following the new rules, we need to refer these one by one to the Property and Local Tax Division. And what they will do is they will go to the floor and then to the property tax and local tax, the division. The floor, I don't know why I went this way. So, but anyway, that's what has to happen. And we have to take these one at a time. So I don't know if I'm going to have Representative Les Legarde do these motions one by one. So I'll entertain a motion for House File 2931. So Representative Les Legarde moves House File 2931 to be referred to Property and Local Tax Division. Any discussion? Now I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. House File 2956. Representative Les Legarde moves House File 2956 for referral to the Property and Local Tax Division. Any discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. House File 3022. Representative Les Legarde moves House File 3022. Refer that bill to the Property and Local Tax Division. Discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. House File 3049. House File 3049, moved by Representative Les Legarde, to the Property and Local Tax Division. Discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. House File 3050.
So moved.
Representative Les Legarde moves House File 3050 to be referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. Any discussion? Not. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. We're getting you all sorts of work there, Representative Carlson. House File 3114.
So moved.
Representative Les Legarde moves House File 3114 for referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. Discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. House File 3134.
So moved.
Representative Les Legarde moves House File 3134 to be referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. Any discussion? Hearing none. Call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. Thank you very much for your indulgence, members, to get those bills through. So, so with that, I'm going to turn the chair over to Representative Les Legarde.
The bill we have before us for consideration is House File 3023. Chair Marquard, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move House File 3023 for possible inclusion into a House Omnibus Bill, Tax Omnibus Bill.
Chair Marquardt moves House File 3023 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. We have an author's amendment. Chair Marquardt offers an amendment, House File 3023, labeled A1. Does everyone have the amendment before them?
Yes.
Any discussion? Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much. So, Chair, you've moved the A1 amendment?
I do.
Okay, very good. So, members, this just puts the bill, it makes it retroactive to 2018 and 2019. And so I'd like to have this amendment added before I talk about the bill, if that's possible.
Any discussion? Those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So last year's special session tax bill, we ended up conforming to many provisions of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And one of the provisions that we conformed to was the treatment of like-kind exchanges. Otherwise, somebody might know as Section 1031 exchanges of the IRS code. And so the way like-kind exchanges worked in the past is that if you exchanged or replaced one asset, and I'm going to be using an example of a tractor, let's say, and traded that in and then bought another tractor, and this could be equipment, it could be land, but this is in a trade or a business, and you're trading this in immediately and reinvesting. In years past, the federal government did not recognize any gain or loss on that sale, that exchange. And so it would not count as any income. It was deferred. So the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act said we're going to keep that same type of non-recognition, so to speak, for real property. But on personal property, which is machinery, equipment, could be artwork, whatever, we are now going to recognize that as income. And so let me just give you an example. I'm going to use, because throughout this, I'm going to say that you're going to trade in a used tractor, and you're going to buy a new one for $200,000. So that might be a John Deere, Rose Series 2020, these bigger ones for $200,000, but you're going to trade your old one in for $100,000. So you've traded in for $100,000, you buy a new one for $200,000. So it was an immediate reinvestment. So in the past, that $100,000 you got on the trade-in would not count as income. But now under the new federal law, which we conform to, that because they're not no longer considering that kind of the like-kind exchange, that $100,000 now has to be considered income. So here's what happened to farmers and small businesses in Minnesota, is that last year's tax bill, we went retroactive to tax years 2018 and tax years 2019 for many reasons. You want to, especially when it comes to depreciation, you want to go back and you want to catch everyone up so they wouldn't lose on some of those things. Well, what happened is if a farmer, in this case, traded in a tractor, got $100,000 on the trade-in, and bought a new tractor for $200,000, all of a sudden now, because of the fact that the state went retroactive and the change in the tax law federally, this farmer now, where there wouldn't have been any income on that sale, now is going to get hit with $100,000 income. And so it was a huge sticker shock. And that's what happened, and if this happened in 2018 or 2019. And the fact that we did not fully conform to Section 179, there isn't enough of a depreciation deduction on the Section 179 to take care of the gain on that new sale that wasn't before. So what House File 3023 does is to try to continue with the conformity, but at the same time trying to provide the farmer with this benefit that they basically had before. And so we're going to go over this in just a minute. But what this does is House File 3023 says now, on these like-kind exchanges, there that would have been, that in the first year, you're going to have to only recognize 20%. So on that $100,000 now, you'd recognize $20,000. And then 80% or $80,000 would be added back over the next 5 years. You know, one-fifth of it each of the next 5 years. So what that does is it matches up with the current Section 179 depreciation deductions. So on Section 179 deduction under Minnesota law, you can deduct $25,000 plus 20% of that new equipment. So that would match, and then it's add, and then you also get to deduct 80% over the next 5 years. So basically what we're doing here is we're taking the gain and matching it with the deduction. And so, and that we'll explain this in just a second. I've got a, you should all have a chart in there. So what we're doing is it should eliminate, in most cases, this kind of huge tax bill that you're seeing farmers get right off the get-go. So let's, have you, does everyone have this sheet with you? All right, would you take that out? Because I do want to run you through that. It should be, no, I've got a few notes I need on here, Chair Davids, just to make sure I don't forget anything. So let's take a look at this and how this would work. So right on the very top is the new cost of this John Deere Row Crop Series tractor that you're going to buy for $200,000. And the gain on the like-kind exchange is $100,000. That is what you traded that in for. You got $100,000 on the trade-in. And we're going to assume a marginal rate of 7%. So I want to calculate the Section 179 first. So here's how you would calculate the Section 179 depreciation deduction under Minnesota law. Is that you bought this new piece of equipment for $200,000 and you're going to put it into operation right away. So your deduction the first year is going to be $25,000 plus 20% of the remaining, which would be $175,000. So it's going to be $25,000 plus $35,000. So that's 20% of the remaining $175,000. So the first year deduction is going to be $60,000 on that $200,000 piece of equipment under the Section 179. So kind of remember that $60,000. And then that leaves $140,000 yet to be depreciated or deducted over the next 5 years. Divide that by five, that's $28,000 a year. So let's then move down to the chart here. So you can see here's current law is the top line. This is current Minnesota law. So farmer does this trade in 2018 or 2019 or into the future, they would have the like-kind gain subject to Minnesota taxes the full $100,000. The amount that is allowed for the Section 179 deduction is $60,000, which means you've got $40,000 of income here, which is going to be taxed, let's say, at 7%. That's $2,800. Now, you also are going to get that subtraction each of the next 5 years of $28,000, which will lower ultimately. But initially, you're getting this sticker shock on these tax bills. So let's look at what House File 3023 does. So House File 3023, the recognition on these type of what were like-kind exchanges in the past, just and this bill is targeted just to these that are no longer, that have to be recognized as income by the federal government. Now just 20% of that $100,000 has to be recognized, and you still have the $60,000 deduction. So now your income is actually a minus $40,000, and there would be a $2,800 relief there. And then into the future, because you've got $80,000 left, that's going to be added as a gain in the next 5 years equally. You got an add back of $16,000 a year, but you still have the subtraction of $28,000 from the Section 179, which would provide tax relief there in that case. So that's the bill. So let me talk about this. The ultimate goal would be to do the full Section 179 expensing. That would be the goal of this committee. What this bill really is an option to put. It's another tool in the toolbox, because we know that tax bills can be evasive. We don't always get those. We never know for sure what the targets are going to be. And I want to make sure that we have an option on the table, that if the Section 179 does not occur, that we've got something that I think will alleviate a lot of this problem. It's not going to, even the full Section 179 doesn't hit every single scenario. But we think that this proposal really eliminates that sticker shock and matches it with the Section 179 conformity that would be able to provide some relief. And it is absolutely crucial that we do something. This is a top priority for this committee. The latest University of Minnesota Extension Service report says that farm income's the lowest it's been since they've kept records for 23 years. Just in 2018 alone, 15% of our dairy farms went out of operation. 34% of all of our farms lost income. And we know this last season, a lot of rain. You know, commodity prices are still low. There's some uncertainty on trade agreements. These are tough times for farmers right now. And so this is a top priority that we do something on this. And House File 3023 is really providing another tool, as I said, in the toolbox, an option that if we don't get everything we want, we have something here to take care of this situation. So with that, members, thank you for allowing me to kind of go through this, and I'm open for questions or comments.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Any questions from members? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, because this is a very important issue, and because, as you say, tax bills can be evasive and we don't always get those, why not then put this not in an omnibus bill, but put it front forward and on the House floor in its bill of its own, mm-hmm. so we can really take care of this issue with the farmers? I certainly won't pontificate on how dire it is for the farmers throughout the communities and throughout our state. Certainly it's the evidence in Wright County. But why not then put it in right away and not in an omnibus bill?
Chair Marquardt.
Yeah. Well, I think for a couple reasons, Representative McDonald and Mr. Chair, is that first of all, if we can do a full Section 179 expensing, that would be the first option. And the timing, you know, for us to do something now versus in a couple months is not going to make a difference, because this bill is retroactive. So if it's approved, you know, the farmers would get the remedy going back. So, and some are in the midst of either setting up a payment plan or whatever. So the timing is not, you know, as long as we can do it this session, the timing isn't crucial. But again, this is one of what could be several options. And I wouldn't want to just take this to the House floor right now without knowing if there's, you know, whatever the target might be, that we could ultimately do something, you know, like I said, the section full expensing if we could. So I just don't think it's necessary to do that. In fact, might be counterproductive if we put something out there that's passed and then we decide we actually have something that, like the full expensing on the Section 179. So.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just to follow up quickly, then Representative Marquardt, I certainly can agree to some of that, but I think that with the surplus that we have, and that because this is retroactive, that is good, but the farmers really need some hope. And with the planting season that we had and the harvest of the wet season, it was a lot of farmers did not do very well. So I would say that, and I would disagree with that. I think it's very important that we put it forward right away. Because it gives them the hope. And knowing that the legislature is going to do something, knowing that we may have a bill that will pass, we certainly, as you know, haven't had tax bills in the past, and I certainly hope that's not the case this year, but I would say it's because of its importance, it really should be separate and passed right away, even though it's retroactive, giving that farmer that extra hope and assurance that the politicians are actually going to do what they say and accomplish it and pass it and put into law and help the farmers in our state. So I think it is of the utmost importance. And I appreciate you coming, bringing this bill first. Of course, that's very important. It's evident that it's the first bill that this committee sees. So if I could offer any opinion that you would adhere to, it would be Section 179 full on the floor right away.
Chair Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, we first actually heard about this at the mini session in Winona. I remember that in Caledonia, that meeting, we actually heard about this situation first, and immediately, I know I know Chair Davids, immediately we're talking with the farm groups immediately on how we can best solve this. So literally almost within a day that we heard that this problem was kind of coming up, we've been working on this. And I think the fact that, our first bill that we're dealing with in tax committee this year is to try to solve this, I think should show very clearly to farmers and small businesses that this is a top priority. And if we don't get a big tax bill towards the end, I mean, we still have an option to take this bill to the House floor, I suppose, at any time. And so I very much appreciate your comments, but believe me, this is a top priority.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing this forward, Chair Marquardt. This is a dire time in the ag community, as everybody knows. And in the district that I represent, 80% of the potato crop was left in the ground. 80%. It will never be recovered. 40% of the sugar beet crop was left in the ground. This is a very, very difficult time. There's already tremendous stress on many of our constituents. And I appreciate the fact that you say that this is an ultimate goal of yours and it's a top priority. But I don't agree that this is the best way to solve the problem. Respectfully, sir. I don't know. I'm not an accountant, so I'm not exactly sure how to work through all this stuff in terms of the numbers. But I have constituents who've come to me, and the highest number that I've heard from a fairly young farmer, a former student of mine, is a tax bill from revenue for $140,000. And this is critical. And to Representative McDonald's point about getting this done now, and I'm assuming that revenue is here, and I appreciate some of the work that revenue has done with a couple of my constituents. But while we're waiting between now and near the end of May, for people who are going to have to set up some sort of a payment schedule, are they going to continue to incur penalties and interest? Because that will be a number two that's going to have an impact, especially on some of these large bills that are coming. And that's not a rhetorical question. I hope that somebody will answer that from revenue. I also think that, the sticker shock has just sent shockwaves through the ag community. I'm a co-author on a bill that would do full conformity for the biennium back to where you are proposing to do. I would hope that you would have a hearing on that bill to maybe put two bills out there so that we can deal with this problem. This was the number one priority of the ag community when the session started last year, and I think it's become an even bigger priority this year because of the sticker shock that's occurred. And again, Chair Marquardt, I appreciate the fact that, and I know that you care, and I hope that we can get this thing moving quickly so that people out there can see that we are serious about tackling this issue and they can come up with some sort of certainty to move forward. And I'm a strong advocate for full conformity on the 179, and I sincerely hope that we get there. Thank you.
Chair Markberg?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. And you, I think, actually had more rain than we did in my area. I mean, I think you actually had more rain, but we still have, there's a lot of corn and a lot of sugar beets in my neck of the woods, too, that are sitting in the ground, unfortunately. So, and in the, on the section, full expensing of the Section 179, last year in the House tax bill that passed off the House floor, we had that in there. And we were the only one between the governor and the Senate. It actually went retroactive back to 2018 and 2019. And we, Representative Poppy, had a bill, House File 515, that was the full expensing. That's the one that was put in there. That is still in possession in this tax committee. So I don't plan to hear bills we heard last year, but if need be, that can immediately, doesn't have to be taken from anywhere. We have it right in our possession, is my information on 515, that we can, in the end, pull that up at any time and put that as what our option. So it is available. So I don't know if your bill differs from that, but basically, you know, we do have a full expensing retroactive bill on the table, so to speak.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that potential that's out there, too. But again, I can't emphasize enough, and the bill that I'm a co-author on is actually Representative Chair David's bill. I'll let him speak to that as to how that matches up with the bill that we had last year, okay? But again, I would like to send a message to the legislature and people of Minnesota that this committee would actually move a bill and not lay it over for possible inclusion, that we would take a vote on it so that we can send a message to yours and my, all of our constituents, that we are tackling this issue, and we can move forward from there. So that's my position. Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. So I just want to thank the author of the bill for bringing this forward so quickly and addressing this issue, because we care about how farmers are doing financially for our state. And I know they're struggling with other issues like affordability of health care, so I hope my colleagues can also help us improve that situation. I'm wondering how many, my understanding is this is for equipment that is purchased. I'm wondering how many farmers are affected, how many purchased equipment, and if the Department of Revenue knows an estimate of the impact of how many farmers may be affected, and how many we can help with this bill.
Chair Markberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, I don't know the exact number of farmers and small businesses that might be impacted here, but I know the revenue note showed that the cost of 3023 would be around $9 million in the first year, and then approximately $11 million, give or take a little bit, into the next biennium.
Okay, thank you. And
I don't know if someone has those numbers as the... and maybe department. Oh, okay. The Department of Revenue would have those numbers. How many? Yep. That's it.
Ms. Bears, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Joanna Bears. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, Representative, it's less than 5,000, and that would be for small businesses and farmers.
Thank you. Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Chair. So I guess I think it would be very prudent of us to wait, because if we can make a bigger change depending on our target and the February forecast, I think it's prudent that we don't bring this bill forward immediately and wait, because maybe we could do more for 5,000 individuals, farmers and small businesses.
Chair Davids.
Thank you very much, Chair Liz Lagarde, and thank you, Chair Markberg, for bringing this portion forward. I think you made the case for hearing the Davids Anderson bill when you said we need more tools in the toolbox, or that this is a tool in the toolbox. I totally agree. I totally agree, and I hope we can hear the Davids Anderson bill, because it is different, and I thank Representative Poppy for the work she did on House File 515 and the work you did shepherding that through as far as it got, but sometimes we need a little bigger push at the end there, and then we'll all work on that, I'm sure. But House File 515 is different than the Davis-Anderson bill in the respect that we waive penalties and fees that the department has imposed, and I think that's very, very important. We have kind of put the department in a box here that I know that they would just soon not be in, because, you know, if something goes bad, I always just blame the department. But we do have to be fair about this, too, and the department is doing the job that the department needs to do. And so we've really put them, I think, in a tough situation here. So actually the bill we have today is not Section 179. In fact, we're basically deconforming a little bit more. But, Chair Marker, don't get me wrong. I really appreciate your efforts here on what you're trying to do. But I think we need to hear the Davis-Anderson bill, and we can look at 515 again. You have it in position. But we have not heard the bill for Section 179 that we're putting forward. And I thank Representative Anderson for his efforts on behalf of this issue. What I think... and you're the chair, you schedule the bills, but I think we should hear the Davis-Anderson bill to get another tool in the toolbox, whereas if I think Representative Schultz is absolutely right, that if we can do more than this, let's do more than this. And so I think that would be very good. The concern I have about this is, and you made the case again, Chair Mark, where lowest income in 23 years for farmers, if that continues for some time and they get the first part of the of this up front, and then it's spread out over another 5 years, so 6 years total. If they have losses several of those years, and you get past the 6 years, you can't carry that forward, from what I understand. And so it was useless to them. So I really appreciate, Chair Marquardt, what you've done here to get the discussion started. I hope we can actually have a Section 179 bill heard that's different than the one we've heard. They're not the same bills. Of course, the Davis-Anderson bill, I would argue, is better. Because of some things that it does, and I'm not criticizing at all the work that Representative Poppy and you did on 515. That was some good work. I think we can build on that and get a better bill out there that can do something. And at some point, Mr. Chair, at your discretion, I'd like to see if House Fiscal, Ms. Templin, could come down, and I've got some questions on the fiscal note at whenever we could.
Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And first of comment is, yeah, this bill will create a little more work for the accountants. It's, I mean, anything you change, anything. But I'd rather have a little more work for the accountants than these farmers getting this sticker shock and having to pay all this. So there's no perfect plan out here, I will guarantee all of us. I think we should ask the Department of Revenue about the penalties and interest, because I've been in contact with the department because I've had the same concerns, and they're saying that's not happening. So I guess I would like if we could refer to the Department of Revenue.
Ms. Bears?
Mr. Chair, a little bit about the timeline and the penalties and interest. We are not assessing penalties and interest when we do the adjustment. So when we do an adjustment for a taxpayer, we will send them a notice, and it gives them 60 days to contact us to pay. At that time, there should not be any penalty or interest assessed. There were times when the form switched over that they may receive a penalty, and then we sent a letter notifying them that they should contact us and we can remove that penalty. After the 60 days, if it wasn't paid or what was remaining, there would have been another bill sent. At that time, there might have been a late payment penalty assessed with that. However, we have authority to do an abatement, and so we were encouraging taxpayers to call us and let us know that this was a result of a tax law changes and that we could abate that penalty.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. And that's great to hear, because I just would not want penalties or interest to be assessed here when, in fact, when farmers in 2018 and 2019 were doing these like kind of exchanges, you know, law kind of changed, swept from under their feet. So they shouldn't be, you know, when something kind of ex post facto, if you will. So appreciate hearing that. So.
Chair Davids?
Well, thank you, Chair Lissalgard, and to the department. Everything you're saying is absolutely correct, but it's really not that feasible for a lot of farmers to do, because a lot of farmers get a bill, they get a penalty, they get late penalties. I don't know of any farmers in my district that have a good working relationship with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. They, and I love the Department of Revenue, don't get me wrong, but they don't. And so I don't see that that's practical. It's just another bureaucratic nightmare for a farmer, who are very, very good and smart people. Otherwise, they wouldn't be farming. They're still there, so they've done some things right. But that's, you know, you say they can call the department for an abatement, but that's, I don't see a lot of the farmers I work with every day doing that. So I think that's a provision in the Davids-Anderson bill that's very beneficial, because yes, you can say you're doing that, we're not really charging penalties and interest, but you can. Not with me, you can't. If our bill would pass, and I think there'd be a lot of support for that. And like I said, I'm very heartened to hear that the department is not charging penalties and interest at this point. But there's nothing in there that says you wouldn't be able to. You certainly have the authority to. So I'd just like to get that cleaned up in the statute. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Pierce.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, and you do make a good point. The reason we are having them call us is because we can't identify the ones that were assessed a penalty from the tax law changes versus other adjustments that may have been made to other taxpayers. So we couldn't do it systematically.
To that point.
Representative
Pierce. Mr. Chair, to that point, I know there's other people ahead of me, but and I appreciate the work that that I've done with the Department of Revenue on behalf of some of my constituents. But the reason that some of my constituents have come to me is because when they call the Department of Revenue, they get chased around someplace and they're on hold, and a couple of people knew nothing about an abatement. They were in a kind of a desperate situation, I'll say. I mean, you know, financially and somewhat emotionally. So I hope that that's getting cleaned up so that when someone calls, they get right to where they need to be, and that revenue is being very upfront with how you're handling these situations in terms of abatements and so forth. And it really needs to be universal. If you're going to do it for one, if one has this opportunity, then we should be doing it for everybody. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question to the chair, just the chairman. You know, just from a preliminary standpoint, have you guys had some conversations as far as preliminary budget targets at all with leadership?
Chair Markward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, no, we have not.
Okay. Well, when you do get to that, Mr. Chair,
Representative Swazinski,
and just, you know, I would just encourage you to do whatever you possibly can to be focused on that. Also, from, you know, small businesses, you know, have also been affected, you know, for that. So casting as wide of a net as it possibly can with this, I think will be beneficial. And, you know, I agree that I think if we can strike early, by May, decisions are made, especially when it comes from an agricultural perspective and product. And, you know, people are buying equipment now and preparing for the season. So, you know, just from the seasonal aspect of the purchases, you know, anything that we can do as early as possible so that we can have some certainty in the market, I think would be beneficial to our local business owners and farmers. So thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you bringing this forward, Chair Marcourt, but I want to echo what Representative David said. I used to work for a CPA in doing business accounting and have ushered folks through sales tax audits with the agency, and it's not an easy process. It's very, very challenging. It is heart-wrenching. It's terrifying. There's a lot of power at the agency. It's very expensive. You add on top of that what our farmers are going through, as you just laid out, you know, how many beets are still in the field and how much potato is still in the field and how much corn is still in the field. This has been horrendous. And you go on top of that, the suicide rate among farmers is just through the roof. We need to do everything we possibly can to save the family farm. And I would urge you to do full conformity. My notes say it's $240 million. I would think out of 1.3 or 1.6 or whatever number we're starting with of a surplus, we could come up with $240 million to save the family farms. They're that desperate. Save the farmer from himself. The biggest concern I have with this plan is what Representative David said, is if you have a loss, you can't carry that forward. That's compounding the financial stress upon them. This is a step, but we really have to do the once the full retroactivity, the 179. I would think we could come up with $240 million to do that. So I think you've heard it from every one of my colleagues on this side and a couple from yours that that's got to be our number one priority in this committee is to do full conformity and really give these farmers a lifeline. At this point, it really is just a lifeline for them. Thank you.
Chair Markworth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neal, thank you for your comments regarding the family farm. And I mean, certainly share that. That's why last year in our tax bill, not only did we have the full expensing of Section 179, but we increased the ag to school credit on school building bonds from ultimately 40% to 70%. And then added another provision where farmers were having, they were losing their homestead classification because their operational entity was different from the ownership entity, and we solved that also. So making sure that we can help farmers has been a top priority for this tax committee last year and this year. And so, as we mentioned, I mean, a goal would be to do the full Section 179. I don't know what targets will look like yet. As tax chair, you know, I always work to do the best I can. But like I said, tax bills sometimes can be evasive, and we had a big tax bill, big conformity tax bill last year, so I just can't make any promises. That's why at least we get an option here that, you know, the lower cost versus the full expensing if we can't get there. But again, the goal is we can get to full expensing 179.
Representative Piesberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to just change direction just a little bit. We're talking a lot about the farm and ag community, which is certainly depressed currently, and we need to deal with that. But this is much more far-reaching than just the ag community. It also reaches into small business and the economic growth here in the state. And one of the things I think we all agree on is we want to provide opportunities for improving the prosperity and economic growth as well as individual incomes. And one of the things that we're hearing is that the amount of capital investment dollars available for any industry tends to relate to better productivity by the employees, and that increased productivity increases our economy and the growth throughout the community here. And what we're finding is that reports that I've seen is Minnesota, as a general rule, has less capital investment than most every other state in the United States. We're not seeing that investment primarily because of things like this, in which you don't get to expense it out right away and so forth. And so I think it's important for us to know that full conformity with federal law has a lot better chance of getting companies to invest here in Minnesota than it would if we just allow them to tax it over 5 or 6 years compared to other states. One of the questions that I have for you, Mr. Chair, is we're hearing about the possibility of maybe full conformity. Do we have an estimate cost on what that would be?
Chair Markworth.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in last year's House tax bill, between the pass-through and the corporations, it was about $225 million in the first biennium. And that was going retroactive to 2018.
Representative Piesberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's important for us, I think, to know, you know, what if we were to go to full conformity, what that cost would be. But I would surely highly recommend that one of the best things that we can do to give kind of a shot in the arm to help all across the state is to go with full conformity. So I would really encourage us to be able to work on that as much as we can, because I believe that has a direct impact in everybody, not just farmers, but farmers are the ones in the most critical need right now. So thank you for bringing this forward, and I hope we can continue to work on even better improvements. Thank you.
Our senior member, Lynn Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I just thought I would comment a couple of times references to targets have come up, and probably everybody's aware, but you know, the forecast will be released February 28th, directly the last day of the month, and that's what will kick in the process in terms of determining the amount of revenue that's available and the targets for the various committees. Today, interestingly enough, is the last meeting of the Council of Economic Advisors as they prepare information and comment to the state economist on how they feel the Minnesota economy is doing. You know, you get the national information and then MMB and revenue apply that information to Minnesota revenue and determine what we have available. So I just thought I would comment because a couple of times people referenced targets, when they would be available and what conversations are taking place. Right now I would say the conversations are really taking place in the administration through the Council of Economic Advisors and MMB.
Okay, Ms. Templin.
I'm sorry.
Chair Davids, I believe you had a question for Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. Maybe Ms. Templin, I'm looking at page 3 of 4 on the fiscal note. And towards the bottom and right foot, right above long-term fiscal considerations, year 2021, $722,117 to administer the program. Why do we go up so much and then it gets cut in half the next year and then down from there? So, well, can you explain those costs?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. Representative Davids is looking at page 3 at the bottom of the fiscal note. In the box or the table that you see in front of you shows the administrative cost that the Department of Revenue has assessed for the impact of this proposal. And about 80% of the cost in fiscal 21 is related to FTEs or employees, and it looks like in the first year of the proposal that they would need, they proposed to need about 6 FTE to administer the proposal in fiscal 21. The administrative costs do are the operational costs for FTE do go down in the following years. And I believe the fiscal note says that they need those operational costs or FTE for outreach, education, taxpayer assistance, and return processing. I think there's the, you know, the startup cost, and then the FTE that are needed may be less in the following years.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde and Ms. Templin. The way it looks to me is that we're really complicating the system. If we need $722,117, and then if you look below that, the third line below that, staff will be needed for ongoing basis to handle return processing, compliance, and enforcement. It seems to me we're setting up a whole new system here to deal with the complexity of this bill. I guess basically, this is probably for you to answer, but I would just make a statement that it looks to me like we're making things a lot more complicated if we need that many people to try and figure it out for less than 5,000 people. More of a comment. Thank you, Ms. Templin.
Any further questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Templin, could you get us the information? And I can look it up too, but the fiscal note for the Poppy bill that's, I believe, still in the system, can you get that for us, please, so we can take a look at what that would have said last year?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I do not believe there is a current fiscal note on Representative Poppy's bill. However, I can request a fiscal note, and I can get that fiscal note to you when it's completed, if that would be sufficient.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. And then, Chair Davids, on your bill, have you asked for a fiscal note as well? Or?
No, we haven't done it. We will.
If there's no further questions, we'll move to testimonies. First up, Amber Hansen Glaser. Please identify yourself for the record.
I guess Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Amber Hansen-Glazer. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. I want to thank the chairman for bringing this bill forward. Minnesota Farm Bureau and the various ag commodity groups appreciate your willingness and this committee's willingness to bring all the options to the table as we work towards a solution for Minnesota farmers. I've appreciated the conversation today as you recognize the financial challenges facing farmers all across the state. It's been a rough couple of years. We're hopeful things will get better, but we need a tax code that works for Minnesota farmers and the unique financial challenges they're facing. I think the ag groups, our first ask would be full conformity for Section 179. That's our first ask. That will fix the situation for not only the farmers that got caught up in this like-kind exchange issue, but will help our tax code moving forward. But like the chairman has said, that this at least provides an option, and we're very grateful for all the options on the table to make sure we can find something if May comes and this is the option on the table. So again, while this bill will bring some relief to farmers that got caught in the unintended consequences, our first ask is full conformity so they can continue to invest in their farms. We appreciate this conversation and look forward to working with this committee to continue to make improvements to the agriculture economy through the year. Happy to answer any questions.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. And so thanks for putting on the record that the Farm Bureau, which I'm a member of, by the way, and Farmers Union, got both sides covered. I want to hear from Farmers Union on this. If you get the two together, watch out. You better just do it. So Farm Bureau's actual position is full conformity. I understand what you're saying. This is a possibility, but would you like to see this done sooner or later?
Ms. Hansen-Glazer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, I think any answers we can find for farmers, the sooner, the certainty is always better for farmers. Understand the dynamics here at the Capitol, but would really like to see full conformity for Section 179 this year for farmers and ranchers.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, our next testifier is Beth Cadone. Cadone. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here. We have an Invest in Minnesota Coalition. You do have a handout in your packet. And it's a group of about 70-plus business associations and local chambers across the state that are really encouraging full conformity with Section 179. So I'd like to thank Chair Marquardt for bringing forward this bill, because it really does highlight a problem, as you've already heard today, that we do need fixed in our tax code, dealing with how we tax our Minnesota businesses and farmers when they invest in their Minnesota operations. Although we certainly appreciate the proposal that was brought forward, we do strongly encourage the tax committee to be looking and enacting full conformity with Section 179. As was mentioned, this had had bipartisan support last year, but unfortunately was not included in the final tax bill. And if you heard, obviously that had a lot of impact on taxpayers that are starting to be hit with these retroactive tax increases. And it was mentioned the farm community, I believe we'll be hearing from other testifiers as well, because it doesn't just impact the farm community, it does impact other small businesses in trucking, construction, others where they're manufacturing, where they are investing in a lot of equipment in the state. We believe this bill is, certainly is moving in the right direction, but it will add a lot more complexity for taxpayers as well as the department. In Minnesota, taxpayers will still be paying more in Minnesota income taxes than at the federal level or in the majority of other states in the year that they make these equipment purchases. The tax bill last year, unfortunately, did have a pretty large retroactive tax increase. The revenue estimate was about $600 million. For businesses for fiscal year 2021 and 2020 and 2021, and about $658 million in 2022-23. Many of those tax increases were retroactive, and many were triggered because businesses decided to invest in Minnesota. So if you do full conformity, that would take away or at least offset some of that tax increase. This bill really highlights the problem caused when we adopted some provisions of the federal tax code, but not others. Many of those provisions were meant to go hand in hand, and the like-kind exchange, as well as the business expensing rules, truly were meant to go hand in hand at the federal level, because the whole idea behind those proposals were how you encourage investment. And that's one of the things I did want to just highlight is, certainly have a short-term implications with this bill, but I think you also have to be looking longer term and how we're going to make sure we are best positioned for strong economic growth in the state. And was mentioned, one of the best ways for our economy to grow is how we increase productivity. And what's needed for increased productivity is to encourage business investment. That really helps their operations to lead to more improved efficiencies, boosting the productivity and increasing innovation in the state. And full conformity with Section 179 is one way to certainly encourage that business investment. We think there's a tremendous opportunity in this session with a budget surplus that's now over $1 billion. The great benefit of Section 179 is a lot of its one-time costs. So you don't have the tails, which is, I know, is a concern with the current budget surplus. So we encourage you to do full conformity. You would join the federal government. It would definitely reduce our complexity. And you would join the majority of other states that have full conformity, including our bordering states, when they're investing in equipment. So thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. So thank you for testifying, Ms. Cadoon. I'm just wondering, are you hearing from your members about the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic and how that may affect this our state's economy, and whether we should be very careful fiscally, given that our economy may slow down and we may want to save a large part of the surplus?
Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, Representative, at this point, I mean, so there was an article in the Star Tribune, you maybe saw that. I have not heard from any members, our membership, regarding concerns at this point and the potential impact. Certainly, there's always a lot of uncertainties in the economy, but I also think you have to be looking at, as I mentioned, for our tax code on how we can make sure we're best positioned in the long term to be encouraging those business investments and making our state as competitive as possible.
Any further questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Andrew Bowman. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Bowman. I'm a certified public accountant with Clifton Larson Allen. And the client base I primarily serve are Minnesota-based trucking companies. And I'm here today testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Trucking Association. We thank Chair Markwart for bringing this legislation forward to help address a tax issue hitting the trucking industry and other businesses investing in Minnesota. We do believe a bigger fix is needed than what is proposed by House File 3023. And that is to adopt full conformity with Section 179 business expensing provisions for all industries. Minnesota is dependent upon the trucking industry. There are 18,350 trucking companies located in Minnesota, transporting 78% of the state's manufactured freight tonnage. The old saying still rings true: if you got it, a truck brought it. Trucking, just like agriculture, is a capital-intensive business, where regular equipment replacement is built into the business plan. New tractors, now costing $150,000 each, are turned over every 3 to 5 years. The failure to include full conformity with Section 179 business expensing laws and last year's tax bills eliminated an important business and tax planning tools, catching our members by surprise and generating unexpected tax liabilities. As an example, a client traded in some equipment in 2019 and will now owe Minnesota income tax solely due to the removal of the like-kind exchange rules and having to add back 80% of any accelerated depreciation taken to offset that. This client traded in about $1 million worth of equipment for about $1.8 million worth of new equipment. Under the old rules with like-kind exchanges, my client would have just reduced the cost of the new equipment by that deferred gain and then would have utilized less Section 179. However, with the new tax bill enacted last year, my client will now have to recognize a $700,000 taxable gain on that trade and won't have the benefit of reducing that gain with Section 179, like they do for federal purposes. Because of this, it will cost my client an additional $54,000 of income taxes in Minnesota this year, instead of being able to defer that, like they can for federal purposes. Freight markets have softened, while operating expenses have increased. So these increased taxes, come at a time when trucking fleets are poorly positioned to deal with them. Restoring full conformity with Section 179 will return tools that will better help trucking fleets manage the timing of their tax payments. As you consider the scope and the size of this bill, please treat all industries fairly and include trucking. Thank you for the opportunity to share these thoughts, and I stand ready to take any questions you may have.
Representative Piersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, does that indicate that if with a 3 to 5 year turnaround of equipment, that somebody could still be paying a tax liability on a piece of equipment they don't even own anymore?
It's possible, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier is David Brower. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is David Brower. I'm a CPA. I'm a tax partner at Lurie LLP and also teach a class on small business taxation at the University of Minnesota. Looking at this bill is a nice first step. However, the Minnesota Society, who I'm here on behalf of, does support full conformity in all aspects of taxation, 179, bonus depreciation, all those areas. This bill kind of highlights the problems when full conformity is not here, that little things will bubble up and require complex fixes to get us to the results that were intended in the first place. One thing I would like to point out that hasn't been raised at this point is that there is actually a potential where this could cost taxpayers dollars, because by making this required instead of an elective provision, someone could get examined years down the road and have that addition required on the back end, and the year of the subtraction would be a closed year in which they would not be eligible to get their refund. So not making it elective potentially even increases the tax on the unwary or those people that are preparing tax returns on their own. So I stand for any questions also.
Thank you. Is there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier is Dan Larson. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dan Larson, representing Minnesota Rural Counties today. We're 34 rural counties, the only organization that advocates specifically for rural county concerns. Happy today to come here and appreciate your willingness to let me come and talk about our thoughts on this bill. We certainly appreciate Representative Marquardt's efforts to offer House File 3023 as an option to conformity, and the committees and the efforts of the committee to acknowledge farmers, ranchers, and businesses in greater Minnesota are fighting through some pretty tough times right now. So as you've been discussing, there are ways the legislature can help, and one of those ways is by leveling the playing field on like-kind exchanges. For the record, MRC supports full conformity with 179 federal tax code for expensing provision and recognizes there is no provision for that conformity in this bill. So, but we, as an organization, are developing our own voice on this, having first heard about it at our December meeting. But our membership is developing a passion around it. We are encouraged in this committee, in what we're hearing today, to hear that the committee is taking this on as a priority, and I think in what we're hearing this morning, giving it the weight that we feel it deserves. So very appreciative of that, and we hope the committee takes note that this is a group outside of the normal agriculture and business groups, so that the coming to you today in support of full conformity, so that you know that the image is, or the issue is bigger than just those groups that you normally would hear from. So we support the bill for addressing a critical concern, as we discussed, farmers, ranchers, and House File 3023. We're addressing a critical concern to struggling farmers, ranchers, and small businesses in greater Minnesota. We urge the committee to consider this testimony a pep talk, that to reach a little higher and to think bigly and boldly in terms of what you can do to develop and present something that will be a deliverable product that will really ultimately reach out and help these struggling farmers, ranchers, and small businesses. So one important piece that I think was addressed, our membership was concerned about, was the reach back provision, that it would any agreement that is forthcoming would reach back and bring back the full biennium for anybody affected. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I'll stand for questions.
Any questions? Thank you. Our next testifier is Gary Wordish. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Wordish. I'm president of the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'd like to thank Chair Davids for his nice comments earlier, too, on the Farm Bureau and Farmers Union working together. As you know, we work together on a lot of issues. I'd like to thank Chair Marquardt for bringing this issue forward, and also, Mr. Chair, this is the first tax hearing of the session, and I want to start by saying thank you to the committee and the chairman for addressing the issue that affects farmers and small business owners around the state. Last session, you championed several tax provisions that would make a real difference for family farmers across the state. Most significantly, you secured a 30% increase to the Ag to School tax credit, which is a win-win for farmers and their communities. We've already seen the effects of this with a record number of capital school construction bond levies passing this year across rural Minnesota. There again, I want to thank Chairman Marquardt and the committee for your leadership on that very important issue. That said, as you've discussed, it turns out we have some work to do to ensure that farmers and small business owners aren't hit with retroactive tax increases as a result of some of the tax changes. That's why I'm glad that you've introduced this bill to ensure that we have all options on the table. Of course, our main priority is to pass full conformity with Section 179 for equipment leasing. And I understand that since full conformity was in last year's tax bill, it's still on the table. We just support the House File 3023 as another tool in the toolbox. This would help farmers and small business owners at a time, well, I guess it does affect both, when we have a record low farm income and farm families are struggling to figure out how to cash flow their operations. Again, appreciate your commitment to making sure this works for farmers and putting this proposal on the table. Look forward to working you with members on the committee on the issue. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
All right, thank you. Is there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Any other testifiers? Please state your name for the record.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, and I just wanted to make a couple brief comments. We have 10,000 members across the state, and a lot of them are affected by both this and Section 179. And I want to thank Representative Marquardt for bringing this forward, but I'm going to echo everyone else's comments. We really need to just totally fix this to the best you can as lawmakers. We had a big sea change at the federal level. We had a dramatic reform of the federal tax law. The best you can do as a lawmaker in Minnesota is conform to Section 179. And that's really the best you can do. As Representative Marquardt pointed out, there's going to be some oddball situations where somebody, you know, might have done better under the old law, under a like, compared to this now. But that's the best you can do. And there's quite a level of complexity here that would be nice to be avoided. And just simply do the conformity would be the best. There was a big disappointment last year. It didn't get done. It was in both tax bills, and I believe the governor supported it, and somehow it fell off the table during the budget negotiations. So just wanted to urge you to pursue that, and let's get it done this year. But thanks for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Any other testifiers? Seeing none. Closing comments, Chair Marquardt. Or is there any member that would like to?
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. We'll certainly want to give Chair Marquardt the last word here, but I would encourage you, Chair Marquardt, to talk to leadership, and I'll talk to my leadership. And we had sound at the chamber dinner the other night. It sounded like all legislative leaders were certainly leaning towards getting this moving. Now, a thought came in my head, and I shouldn't utter every thought that I have, obviously, but as a former tax chair, the thought of bringing a tax bill to the floor before the omnibus tax bill, it just kind of reminded me of somebody once said, you know, seeing Dr. Seuss on crack. Because if you think about it for just a second, you just don't do that. And there's been some suggestions to just move it forward, and I'm very skittish about that. It's what could possibly go wrong is what my thought is. So I hope that we can move this forward, and I would like to offer, and I can't offer it totally yet because I haven't talked to leadership on this, but if I could get a commitment, well, first of all, to me it really doesn't matter if it's Poppy's bill. A good friend of mine once said, it's amazing what can be accomplished when no one cares who gets the credit. So if it's not the David Anderson bill, which is, of course, the best bill, if it's the Poppy bill, if you take it over, whatever you want to do on full conformity 179, we need to get this done, and we need to get it done quickly. Now, as a chair, former chair, I would not recommend taking a tax bill, anything that deals with the tax code, to the floor without being the omnibus tax bill. That's just kind of the way we do it. But in this case, when you see that, I didn't see anybody come up and testify in opposition to what you're doing, to what I'm doing, to what Chair Poppy did. Nobody's in opposition to it. So if we could move forward with no shenanigans, no skullduggery, no chicanery, no tomfoolery, no sand in the gears, I think it's that important. And I understand the whole thing with ways and means and the money and all that. I get that. But that's for the legislative leaders to decide. If this committee could move forward with a full conformity, I think you'd get full support from this side of the aisle to move that forward. And I understand Chair Carlson has the numbers. But I think this rises to the level of importance that we need to move this forward as soon as we possibly can. And again, I reiterate, I love the Farmers Union. I love the Farm Bureau. When those two are together, I just say, I've been here longer than anybody except my good friend Lynn Carlson. And over the years, I found when those two get together, just get out of the way and do it. And seriously, because when you can get agreement from those two groups and every other group that testified, I hope we can, and I know it's a tough thing, but I hope we can move this forward. And it'll take some leadership agreement and so forth. But I think it rises to the level where this needs to be funded. And again, somebody testified, and I, looking at the numbers, it costs more now. It does go down. So the tails aren't so severe. But I'm hoping we can work on this and get this moving before May. Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde, and thank you, Chair Marquardt, for this bill.
Thank you very much.
Closing comments, Chair Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your comments, Representative Davids, and thank you for the testifiers and all the discussion here today. I want to make it loud and clear that this is a top priority, is to make sure that we can make sure that farmers and small businesses get this tax relief when it comes to this like kind situation. I think the fact that this is the first meeting of 2020, this is the first bill up, should send a very clear message to our farmers and small businesses around the state that this is an issue we're going to be dealing with, and it's a top priority. And every single testifier, and I think everybody on this committee would agree that full expensing of Section 179 is the ultimate goal if we can get there. And so that's certainly going to be a goal. This is an option. So depending on what ultimately happens and targets and what forecasts say and all those things, we at least have a lower cost item to a higher cost, and you know, somewhere in between. But I think it might be premature right now to say that you're going to name Jim Mudcat Grant as your starting opening pitcher now in February, when Sandy Koufax might be available later on. We want to make sure we get the best potential package ultimately when we go to the House floor with a tax bill. And Mudcat Grant was a good pitcher, won 21 ball games in 1965, but he was no Sandy Koufax. And so that's why I think we just have to make sure we have all the options on the table before we probably move a bill forward. But again, thank you, and I would ask members to approve House File 3023, move for, as amended, for possible inclusion into a House omnibus tax bill.
Mm-hmm. With that, Chair Marquardt renews his motion that House File 3023, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Tax bill, and it is laid over.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Thank you, Chair.
Meeting adjourned.